The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
From the At Last is the Year 2000 issue, published actually in late 1999. Bible Basement. It could be you. Has nothing to do with the lottery, but is issued by the Penfold Book and Bible House, Oxford, UK. The cover shows a finger pointing down through a field of five pointed stars, while the text tells how money cannot buy happiness, only Christ. That empty feeling, this hole inside you is a God-shaped vacuum. It goes on. Every attempt to buy satisfaction while ignoring the problem of sin will fail. We could replace the word sin with environmental destruction and use it as a green leaflet. Another Penfold leaflet, The 23rd Shepherd, shows a typical couple in cartoon form, transfixed by their TV. The TV set is my shepherd. My spiritual growth shall want. It maketh me to sit down and do nothing for his name's sake, because it requireth all my spare time. Presumably the couple aren't watching a gospel channel. Would Penfold feel the same way if they controlled the airwaves? M. Simpson of BCA Gospel Outreach, Birmingham, UK, looks to higher things. Is the truth really out there? Asks his colourful flyer, the cover a hilariously inept scene of outer space, bodged from ropey clip art. Could it be that you are hoping for some kind of reassurance, he goes on, and the presence of alien life out there will somehow make everything all right? Simpson continues, if intelligent life from another planet were to visit and keep visiting the Earth, we would by now have a sizable and respectable data file, including decent photo and video footage. What we have is a vague assortment of stories and blurred photos. So much for a careful sifting of the evidence. We then move on to abductees. If we examine the accounts of those who claim to have been abducted by aliens and to have been subjected to genetic experimentation, then it seems that three possibilities present themselves to explain matters. 1. Those abducted have brain disorders. 2. They are charlatans seeking money for their story. 3. They have, in fact, been abducted, but not by space travellers, but more likely by disembodied spirits or fallen angels who are seeking to reproduce themselves in the form of a body of substance. Ought how the leaflet qualifies the third option with more likely. More likely than what? The first two options are ludicrous, since only ridicule follows such accounts. But could the third fit in with the influence of lower fourth dimensional entities? Or is a better interpretation that of mind control experiments? Alas, the flyer fails to look any deeper than its own blinkered agenda. Far better is Barry Smith's World in Crisis catalogue from the International Support Ministries UK. Like America's Tex Mars, Smith is an evangelist who is also a conspiracy theorist and is happy to discuss the Freemasons, Illuminati and that whole crowd. Obviously, David Icke's idea that Jesus is a fictional character designed to trap minds in dogma would not go down well here, but Barry ranges as wildly through the field with a series of books and videos. The coming of the Illuminati's Antichrist is a hot topic, also the Millennium Bug, Cash-Free Society, and the meaning of 666. Some juicy titles too. Chaos of the Cults, After Death, What? And The Devil's Jigsaw. Tex Mars is an American preacher with a decided conspiracy bent and hosts the entertaining World of Prophecy show on International Shortwave Radio. The information was sent some tapes of Tex in action. Each episode is an hour long, often featuring a guest, and correlate the New World Order with biblical prophecy. Obviously, Tex wouldn't be too impressed with David Icke's Jesus concept either, but neither does he shirk from criticising the established church. Otherwise, he covers much the same ground David Icke does in The Biggest Secret, Sans Reptiles. Tex talks to Angie Carlson in Who's Killing Africa, who outlines the highly dubious status of the World Wide Fund for Nature, WWF, the Duke of Edinburgh's pet charity. Hiding behind false environmental goals, the WWF closed vast stretches of Africa in the guise of national parks as a front to military operations. Much of the environmental movement, according to these sources, was set up by a New World Order group, the Club of Rome, in the early 1970s, including Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, and even the supposedly renegade Earth First. Shocking possibilities to those of us involved in such organisations, though those lower down the pyramid are certainly not implicated. Why would this be done? Perhaps to set up a controllable opposition to highlight problems which only global rule through the NWO could solve. In another edition, Tex speaks to Dr. John Coleman, author of the book The Committee of 300, which reveals how just 300 signatories to this particular high echelon covert group rule the planet's operations. The membership is always an exact 300. The Biggest Secret used Dr. Coleman's book as one of its primary sources. Tex also examines the cult of Diana, outlining the conspiracy behind her murder in the context of the British Illuminati and biblical prophecy, and coming to the outrageous conclusion that Prince Andrew is the Antichrist. Jack Chick is never one to use tweezers when there's a sledgehammer in reach, and such is the approach he uses in his mini-comics, preaching a reactionary interpretation of the Bible in popular form. I first saw his work in This Was Your Life, which I mimicked with an anti-car theme in my own mini-comic Smashing Cars, 1997. I recently read Chick's The Beast, a similar tiny comic outlining the coming NWO in the light of biblical prophecy, touching on Satanism, the 666 mark, a global computer, etc. It's hard to know how Chick expects a sceptical reader to react to some of his imagery, such as the Life as it is today spread featuring a lecherous drunken bar. One character proclaims, "I have the power, Lucifer is Lord," while his girlfriend replies, "Yes, and we are bringing peace with a one world government, a new age." Your average pub talk, surely? Even so, these little books are fascinating in their way and are bound to make you think. Back to Penfold for more fire and brimstone. Their celebrity test asks, who are these people? Over pictures of Elvis, Marilyn Monroe, John Lennon, and others. What do they have in common? Adds Penfold in red ink, matching a blank red celebrity square. They are all dead, blares the inside text, looking at just five of the Ten Commandments. For example, have you ever used God's holy name in vain, substituting it for a four-letter filth word to express disgust? The Bible calls this blasphemy. But does that mean it's okay to use a four-letter filth word? Have you ever hated anyone? It adds. Then the Bible says you are a murderer. So murderers get off lightly. The same penalty as hate. May as well go the whole way then, but ask the victim which they prefer. There's nothing wrong with the Ten Commandments as such, but po-faced, heavy-handed interpretations do nothing but create an authoritarian rant. The final nice touch. Oh, by the way, that empty box on the front of this leaflet is reserved for you. Think about it. This could be the day that you die. Charming. But what if you're not a celebrity? So there we are. That was an entertaining look through a whole bunch of evangelical leaflets which were given to me by our colleague Wayne John Sturgeon, who's very, very good at collecting stuff like that. Obviously, I tried to convey there the various illustrations that were featured in the leaflets, black and white cartoon art, and often the leaflets are printed in, you know, black and one overlaid colour and quite a graphic kind of style, very kind of 1950s, 1960s looking, a lot of them. It's interesting hearing that last one there about the celebrities. Elvis Presley, of course, the incredible rock singer, definitive. Marilyn Monroe, the actress. John Lennon, the English pop star, of course. And, well, at least two of them were definitely... Well, you can argue how they die, can't you? I mean, Elvis Presley, I think, had an unfortunate death, a heart attack. I don't think anyone argues about that. They may argue, of course, is Elvis still alive? Is he on the moon? That sort of thing. I think we can discount those sort of thoughts. Marilyn Monroe, of course, was involved with John F. Kennedy at one point and married the playwright Arthur Miller, and has often been a bit of conspiracy lore about whether she committed suicide or was murdered or whatever. And John Lennon, of course, was shot by Chapman, I think it was, in 1980. I may be wrong about that. It's interesting, there are always going to be theories about these things. The guy who shot John Lennon could well have been a mind-controlled slave given an instruction to do so, possibly to traumatise people who have been brought up on his music. That's a theory that's been bandied about. Marilyn Monroe, it's been said she might have been a monarch slave, one of the New World Order mind-controlled slaves, you know, doing various services, let's put it like that, for politicians, and bumped off when maybe she was asking too many questions or had outlived her function. And Elvis Presley, to be honest, I don't know many theories about Elvis dying that aren't him just dying. Interesting that Elvis Presley was actually very interested in UFOs, and incredibly so was Marilyn Monroe. So there's a little link there. John Lennon, I don't know if he was interested in UFOs, but obviously he was into all sorts of wacky stuff, a lot of it possibly going up in smoke in various ways, hopefully not injected. But, you know, certainly the music there is very, very mind-expanding. I don't think the Beatles did stuff that was outer space orientated so much. It seems very English and kind of witty, psychedelic, Yellow Submarine, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, that type of thing. Some rock bands like Pink Floyd, for example, much more space rock orientated. Not really prog rock in the real 70s sense, though. That was Yes and bands like that. But it's interesting. There is a sort of a little thread there. They're all kind of mainstream, but they've all got a kind of countercultural, iconic attachments to them as well. I mean, I think Andy Warhol, of course, did a very famous screen print of Marilyn Monroe. In some ways, not a nice portrait of someone with the kind of pink face, yellow hair, red lips, kind of just printed, very flat colours overlapping on a black and white photograph. Probably very similar stuff's been done of Elvis. John Lennon, of course, you know, he was probably the main kind of, I wouldn't say intellectual driver of the Beatles, but you tend to think of him as the really intelligent one. Maybe George is the soul of the Beatles. I think he really did know about other realities. If you listen to, I think it's on Sgt. Pepper's, his particular track with all the very Indian influences on it, is really true. You know, if you listen to that and bear in mind the holographic reality ideas we hear about nowadays, about everything being a bit of an illusion and vibrating forms. I mean, interestingly, on the bottom of the page from the Information magazine, I did actually put in a footer, not part of the article, but we put in these little quotes here and there in the magazine, a very nice quote by Dr. Terence McKenna, who we've mentioned before in the Information, of course. "If the truth is told so that it can be understood, then it will be believed." It's a great quote. It says a lot, very, very short. It's kind of, in a way, saying that the way we use language, if it conveys a meaning very simply and clearly, it goes straight through to our minds and we really get it, as they say. You know, did you really get that? Yeah, I got it. You know, an obfuscation and a lot of confused talk does create, you know, confusion and perhaps is designed to, I think, politicians are masters of that. The language is really created up out of little units, Latin and Greek, and any word can be analysed as little parts, like little Lego bricks, and they're stuck together. And each word is often two or three little verbal Lego bricks put together to make a meaning. And it's something I will explore another time, because I think when we hear, you know, these politicians talking, they are often confusing us. There's neuro-linguistic programming, which I was listening to a program on the radio earlier today. It's a way of actually mirroring how someone talks to you, like in a job interview. If the employer crosses their legs, you cross your legs. If they're relaxed and leaning back, you do the same. And it mirrors, and it is a way of you being fitting in with the situation. And it's interesting looking at religions here. I'm kind of covering a few different ideas spinning off this article. But religions are often a man in a pulpit, you know, telling you very authoritarian to do this, do that. And in a sense, you know, you are being programmed. You kind of go along with it and you make the right assents or the right replies. In the Catholic tradition, there's often very much, you know, something is said and you reply back. And it's almost a script. I mean, I went to a funeral quite a few years back, not 10 years ago now, but it was a very Catholic funeral. And when the priest, you know, would say something, everyone almost seemed to have a scripted reply. The crowd, they're very Catholic. I didn't know what to say. I didn't say anything. I mean, I respected the occasion, but I couldn't really add anything to it as such in terms of these replies, because they were very much pre-formatted things. And, of course, David Icke was mentioned a couple of times here. The Biggest Secret was his current book in 1999. He's written quite a few since. He's covered the reptilian shape-shifting idea a lot more, and he's gone into the holographic stuff a great deal more recently. And that is, again, coming back to the work of Michael Talbot, who probably may or may not overlap with Terence McKenna. I mean, Terence McKenna is more into the psychedelic mushrooms. The Michael Talbot with the holographic universe was more theorising based on different ideas of perception. They probably do cross over in the middle somewhere. I'm sure they do. I'm sure Terence McKellar would agree with the holographic stuff. Obviously, the mushrooms themselves are holographic, aren't they? If they're in a universe which is holographic. So perhaps they're just something you take and it gives you the sense of a way of opening up and understanding this stuff. In a way that John Lennon's music, again, Sgt. Pepper's in particular, perhaps is a very psychedelic kind of album. I'm not overly familiar with all the albums, but it's not a route I particularly go down myself. I mean, I like that kind of stuff as a fascinating soundscape, as a sound engineer, making these kind of audio recordings like this. It's always fascinating to hear what a good sound engineer can do with, you know, different sound effects laid down and creating an atmosphere. But I think that, to me, is mind-expanding. It creates a something for the imagination to lock onto. And of course, back then you had the fantastic album covers, Sgt. Pepper's Peter Blake, the wonderful dense imagery with all the characters on the front. Aleister Crowley was among them, in fact, and he used to dabble with maybe not so much New World Order, but he certainly used the Eye in the Pyramid. There's a very famous photograph with him with the Eye in the Pyramid. I think it's on his forehead. It's perhaps a badge or some sort of emblem stuck on his forehead. So countercultural, yes, satanic, maybe. You know, a lot of these celebrities are often, you know, have people interpreting their stuff in ways maybe they didn't intend. I mean, the Rolling Stones would be called a satanic rock band, for example. They can't get no satisfaction, and certainly they wouldn't be seen as a religious inspiration to anyone. I think the Beatles were always the band you could tell your parents you liked. The Rolling Stones were the bad boys. So, fascinating stuff. Duke of Edinburgh, yeah, WWF. Don't hear so much about them recently, in the 10 years since this was written. Seems to have fallen down a bit as an organisation. I mean, I would care about animal conservation. Angie Coulson put a very good case in her Who's Killing Africa tape, which I've listened to, and certainly the New World Order has been implicated in trying to reduce population, and this could be the reason why there's been AIDS epidemics and stuff. But you know, it's a very difficult one sometimes. I mean, like the Sierra Club in America has been accused of similar things, but then they have saved some nice wildernesses. As an environmentalist too, I would worry when, such as down in Kentucky, you know, there's been terrible mining where they literally blow the top off various mountains and you just get these mountains kind of sliced off to get the coal. And that's taken, you know, millions of years to be created, that landscape. And that's a very bad way of doing it. And we need to move on to the greener technology, but not in a reactionary sense, which I'd sometimes think the Green Movement have come up with, being a rather a cultish organisation that are trying to stop science as well, and that's a bad thing. And we really can't go back. The human brain's always going to think. And I think if we went back to earlier technology, I think all that would happen is in a few hundred years, we'd just work out all the same stuff again. I mean, if you look at Atlantis, whether that was real or not, if we assume it was for a moment, if they had got nuclear technology or something, then, you know, they'd obviously blew themselves up, but that was thousands of years ago. And we've kind of evolved it again. So what we've really got to do is make a jump of consciousness and get a lot more clever, a lot more smart. So I think these religious texts, like the Ten Commandments, you can always take inspiration from them. It's probably best not to take them too literally all the time. I mean, thou shalt not murder, maybe. But they're thought-provoking too, I think. And I think a lot of this religion is meant to be thought-provoking. I mean, Jesus wasn't really, in the way we understand the word Christ, it means light, and it's actually to do with the old pagan idea of the solstice, which is the 21st of December, the shortest night of the year. And Christmas, although they do say that Christianity moved the date, in a sense it didn't really, because the light is reborn. You noticeably can see the days are just getting longer again by the 25th, so it's not true to say it shifted off the date of the solstice. The solstice is the shortest night of the year, but 25 is the rebirth of the light. So you can understand it like that. I mean, whether there was an actual single character like Christ, there would have been people with long hair going round and saying good things, but whether that's quite who we're referring to in the Bible, I don't know. It's possibly a conflation of different figures, almost a kind of fable in a way, like an Aesop's fable put together. And is inspiring, I guess. You know, it's not something I've read. I'm not against it in any way. You know, you can't do it all. But you get an unusual glimmer of all these subjects from these various leaflets. But like I said, they're all written from rather skewed angles. And that's always the trouble with stuff like this. And of course, a lot of the shortwave radio still goes on. Obviously, technology's moved on a bit since 1999, and there's a lot more stuff on computers now, on internet, you know, audio, video, of course, with YouTube, stuff like that. And as I understand, Tex Mars is still going, and he's moved into those areas. So he's probably saying similar stuff. Of course, the Millennium Bug always stands out as being something that dates this kind of material, and it didn't quite happen, but, you know, whether it was prevented by a lot of intercessions by scientists or whether it was just a fear-creating idea, maybe some kind of psychological experiment on the population, who knows? Certainly 9/11 came along not so long afterwards, so maybe they were trying out a kind of fear reaction. I always think there are conspiracies. It's definitely a new world order. I do believe all that. I think, though, there are cock-ups within it. I don't think it always goes as well as they hope. And I think there's sometimes campaigners nudge it back a little bit, and so it doesn't quite come off as expected. So I think sometimes taking a very literal idea, if everything's a conspiracy, you know, 9/11 is a conspiracy, but it's a little bit badly thought out as well. You know, yeah, sure, they had explosives in the buildings, but they probably didn't think anybody would look at the photos that closely and see puffs of smoke coming out the side. It seems ridiculous, but, you know, it's a kind of situation where, you know, if you listen to a mainstream person, they'll say, well, it couldn't be a conspiracy because the planes hit the buildings and they fell down. But you have to say to them, well, buildings don't fall down like that. They don't go straight down when they're hit on the side by a plane. And why have we got explosives coming out the side? Why have we got bits of thermite sparks coming out the side? You know, in the end of the day, what you see is what you get. And you can see all those things in the videos if you look carefully enough. And I suggest that, like with the moon landings, can't broaden this out too far. But, you know, the photos sometimes are rubbish. You can see obvious flaws in them. But if you say to somebody who doesn't want to question it, these are photos of the man on the moon, they're going to say, yeah, the photos of the man on the moon. They're never going to question it. So there you go. Okay, well, that's a little glimpse into Bible Basement. Thanks very much.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.